Next case is 97-2006, Hartsfield Corporation v. Roger Tracy Tax Commission.
Should be overruled, and that there clearly is a distinction between gain from recaptured depreciation and capital gains being two different kinds of income, gain being two different kinds of gains. If we should find that, then where do we go with the apportion allocation argument? I must tell you, when I read the brief, it seems to me that you almost use those two interchangeably. And I know you don't mean that, and I know that's not what I should be getting out of the brief, but in the end, I think you use allocation and apportionment all in the same sentence. And I'd have to find it again, but I'm confused on that issue, and I need to know whether you want it allocated, whether you want it apportioned, and what do you think our statute says?
Well, first of all, I think there's assignment of income. It's taking income and deciding where it's going to go. And there's two ways to do it, apportionment and allocation. And I'm trying to distinguish between the two, and I apologize. But what our argument is that this income should be apportioned. Now, we have also argued that the income should be allocated.
That's what I meant.
And in fact, that gives a $70,000 refund. Allocation, the way we want it done, would give us a better answer. But your question was, what does the statute say? I think the statute says apportionment. And it says apportionment because the system is set up as all income is apportionment, except that income which fits into one of these very three categories. And the category we're talking about is capital gains from tangible property, capital gains from real property.
Now, if it's apportioned, what kind of a refund would you get?
None. Simply eliminate.
That's how I read it, and that's why when you then launch into the allocation, it seems to me that maybe it's like pleading in the alternative.
And that's what I tried to do.
Okay. But allocation, that isn't really what the statute says, is it?
On the allocation?
It says apportion.
I believe it clearly says apportion. The tax commissioner says Gordon has told him he can't apportion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we actually did in this case is at the time this transaction occurred in 1989, the law was as he filed the return. And the tax commissioner would agree proportionally. So for the first 18 years of the statute, it's proportionate, and that's exactly what we did.
Okay, now let me go one step further then, and then I'm finished. I now understand the apportionment and the allocation, and I understand about the Borden case. If, in fact, we didn't do either apportion or allocation, would you be in a position of being doubly taxed? Have you paid taxes in the other states where you might have apportioned this?
I can't understand either apportionment or allocation because it's like the entire world is either apportionment or allocation. You either, what you have, Your Honor, is that you've got the plot, that you put all the income, you put all the expenses in, except to keep out certain things, and you assign those specifically to the state. But everything else, everything that doesn't get specifically assigned to the state is in this plot. And what happens is that the deduction that we got each year, the depreciation deduction, went into the plot. With all the other income and with all the other expenses.
Even though the property was physically located in a geographical jurisdiction?
Absolutely, Your Honor. If we had claimed that what the tax commission has spoken 87% of the gain, if during the years of ownership we had tried to pay 87% of depreciation, we would have been assessed.
Mm-hmm.
Not only what our defense would have been, because the statute is clear.
None.
You take only that proportionate part of your income and the proportionate part of your expenses. And the depreciation expense was, we're entitled to 9 to 10%. On average, it's 9% a year. And at the same time, of course, all the other states, Pennsylvania, Florida, all the other states are taking their piece of it, and they're recognizing a percentage of this deduction. So then when it comes around to selling the property, what happens is Florida, California, Pennsylvania take their percentage. Now, what Ohio does, in effect, is reach in and take this percentage plus a whole bunch more. We calculated that 152% of the income is taxed, so that the states are each getting their proportion, but Ohio is taking far too much.
So some of it is taxed twice.
Clearly, clearly. It's taxed fully and then taxed more. And it's because the system is set up on the basis that only capital gains. And a capital gain is the gain you realize from a capital asset representing the difference between what you paid for it and what you get when you sell it. And in this case, they paid 8.6, they got 6.9, so they did not get any increase in the value. They didn't have any capital gain. Now, nobody is appearing before you to say this was a capital gain. The tax commissioner doesn't say it is, we certainly don't. Or tax And even in the Borden case, the court didn't say it's a capital gain. But the word capital is extremely important. And it distinguishes between the masses of income, the sale business, or the other kinds of income that you have, that is all important.
And when you say capital gain, you're referring strictly to state taxation.
It's state taxation, but in fact, Your Honor, the definition that I propose is also consistent with the federal scheme. There's not to do any injustice to it. No one's going to have a hard time filing a tax return with this tax.
I thought when we calculated taxes gain for purposes of federal tax, you hope that you appreciate that.
Actually, Your Honor, they have their own costs in the federal system. So they can take costs, and then you have depreciation under their cost system, which is different than your book value. And that's just, in this case, they bought it for $8.6 million. They depreciated it 4.4. So they had to pick that up. But it's still a comparison for capital gain purposes, both, I think, logically on the state system and consistent with the federal, is to look at that difference between what I pay for it and what I get for it. And if I get an increase, that value related to the capital asset. But if all I'm doing is recapturing depreciation, this is deduction.
So you're saying on the federal tax return, whether it's real estate or whether it's personal property, you have a sale, a calculation shown on the federal tax return is what you paid.
It is, well, you start off with that. You start off with what you paid for it.
I didn't think the other did.
No, well, if you look at the return, it might not be on the face of the return, but the calculation. then for federal purposes, you have to make adjustments to that. So if there's appreciation, you reduce that original acquisition cost to what the state.
But isn't the only number that goes on a federal tax return is the appreciated value? It's the value that you personally own it at for federal tax purposes.
That's true, Your Honor. But behind that return, there are worksheets in companies' office that would have the original acquisition and would have accumulated appreciation.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, everyone knows what the state was. It's always one of the different, but for federal tax purposes.
We were able to identify, and there's no question about the identification of the property and the adjacent and the tax that are got together on the line. So there's no question in this case what we're talking about. There's no question that with no capital gain with respect to the sale of these assets, and that it isn't a matter of you being bound by federal law if you're not. You can look at federal law. If it makes sense to deviate from federal law, you can do that. If you have an attack, there's a couple of cases. The Goodyear case being one of them, General Mills, where the federal system got out of the thing. What they said was, we're going to treat tax benefits, transfer of tax benefits, as if it were legal.
But on the issue of capital gain or recapture depreciation, how would it be at variance with federal law?
In this case, we're not at variance.
Oh, I thought you said that we don't have to worry about it because that's the. I mean, worry about varying from federal law. It's perfectly consistent with how you file your federal return.
It is perfectly consistent.
And did I understand you to say that Borden didn't talk about or mention capital gain?
Well, Your Honor, up until the last paragraph, that's clearly all they were talking about. As I understand what the court was saying, is that you're not bound by federal law. And I'm going along those lines. It's true with respect to apportioning and assigning the income. And allocating, you're not bound by federal law. But in the last paragraph, the responsive paragraph, Borden, when they're talking about what happens to that particular property, the word capital is dropped from that last paragraph.
Oh, okay.
It talked about gains.
Just gains, yeah. But all the way through, they were talking about capital gains.
Yes, and up to that last paragraph, we had no disagreement with the court. We agreed you are not bound by federal law. But the point
I see.
Is, when we get to the gains, when the tax commissioner makes the argument about the reason, when he starts getting to the point, he drops the word capital as well. He has to, because you can't call it a capital gain. Even though the statute is based on that word, capital gain, and that word is an important word, I don't think there's any question about that, it still gets dropped when you get into trying to argue why it gets assigned. This is a capital asset, but it is not a capital gain. And it's only a capital gain.
Other than the obvious one, is there any quantitative difference between element difference between capital gain and recapture depreciation?
Well, the
obvious one being that they're just different animals.
But they are different animals, and they're treated differently for a reason. I mean, it's tied into the business being conducted by the company. And there's a difference with the capital gain. That's the extraordinary event when you sell a property. But what we've got here is really a business deduction.
Is the taxable consequence any different between recapture depreciation and capital gain?
I'm sorry, for what purpose, Your Honor? For federal purposes?
For federal purposes or even state purposes with regard, well, it isn't with state purposes because we said they're the same. Is there a different tax rate for recapture?
For state purposes?
Yes. For recapture depreciation as opposed to capital gain?
Well, no, there really isn't with respect to the rate. That is what's going on.
No, I know that's not what's here, but I'm just looking for another distinction between the two.
For state purposes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think in terms of assignment of income, which is a separate animal to itself, not the same even the calculation of the income, that they are fundamentally different. I don't know if I'm responding to that.
You are. They're fundamentally different, but you just say they're fundamentally different and be done with it, but I always like to find a reason for saying that.
If you go back to the original, why are there specific items? Mm-hmm. These are items in General Assembly that seem to be different than your normal reporting system. So when you sell property, it's not because you're using the business, it's because the property value has increased. And who but the state of Ohio should get the benefit when you have an increase in value of the property? And that's what the property is located. But that's not true with respect to depreciation, which is a business deduction and taken back into income only as a recapture of the business. So that's a fundamental difference. And that is recognized in the other states as well. And the other point being the constitutional implications. We have shown in overtaxation 152%. That is the case of the Commerce Clause. And we also have a case out of Vermont that shows that it's a speaking protection violation. So it's very serious. And we ask you to apply that to capital, that word capital to the statute.
Supposing we found that Borden was flawed in that there really is a difference between capital gains and recaptured depreciation, does that really change this case? If you apportion?
You would have to overrule Borden because that is the only gain that was issued.
All right, let's assume we do that. Then where are we? Don't we still get to the apportionment argument?
I think you could only go back to apportionment. But if you look at their allocation argument and look at 5733.051, there is absolutely no statutory support for any type of allocation on the basis of where you could appreciate deductions. C and D are the only divisions that deal with the allocation of gains in the sale. And those clearly require such gains to be allocated to the location where the property was when the sale took place.
Mr. Perry, let's assume you have a business and you depreciate your fixed assets. You also decide you're going to sell them. Don't you, on different lines on the tax return, and don't you believe that there is a difference between recaptured depreciation and a capital gain?
No, there is not. On your federal return, all you have is gains from sale of property. Unlike investment tax credit recapture, where you have a specific recovery of separate entry on your return, The only item we have here is the gain in the sale of the property. The depreciation concept simply results in adjusted basis. They reduce the basis because of that is some of that cost, that original cost, has already been recovered by the depreciation system. But for federal purposes, it's all treated as a gain in the sale of that property. Now, let's go quick.
I'm going to do tax practice now, so I'm 2 years away from it. But on the federal return, when you're figuring capital gains, do the I recall, at least on some types of property, the depreciation aspect may be taxed at a different rate.
That's correct.
Than the rest, because it went off its ordinary expense. So it's back in your ordinary income.
Well, it's treated as ordinary income. The reason for it is there are specific provisions in the Internal Revenue Code that said, although it is a capital gain, for purposes of federal income tax, that average of the gain is increased.
Justice Douglas was asking, on a federal expense, does get a different rate for some of it.
That's correct. Right.
But not on the state.
That's correct. And the fact is, we relied on those specific provisions in the Internal Revenue Code in arguing in Morton that similarly, it should be that portion of the gain should be treated as ordinary income for better for state tax.
Is it true in this case that when this depreciation went off as an expense, that it was apportioned among the states?
It's not as part of the general thought of business expenses. That's not as simple an answer as Mr. Berger is indicating. Each state apportions some income and allocates some income. What you're supposed to try and do for depreciation expense is to assign some of that depreciation expense as best you can, some allocated income and some apportioned income. So, if you have all apportional income, that would be true, but it's not necessarily what it
takes. His argument was that it was apportioned when it went off as an expense.
Right.
Wouldn't the fair result be to apportion when it comes back?
Well, frankly, that's specifically what the tax commissioner argued this court in Morton. That argument was simply rejected. And the problem we have now, we have a decision we had 8 years ago. Since that time, the taxpayers and the tax commissioner have followed that decision. They followed, the taxpayers have followed it in preparing franchise tax reports, paying their tax. The commissioner has followed it for 8 years in auditing taxpayers. If this court now overturns that decision, it throws everything into turmoil.
Yeah,
because we have a 4-year statute of limitations. It's still open.
Does following board necessarily result in 150% taxation to this corporation, or is there a way out?
I would dispute Mr. Berger's claim that the evidence is clear. They didn't present any returns from any of the state stores. But certainly, it's a possibility, and as the manufacturing case points out, there is always a possibility of duplicative taxation when you're taxing the income of multi-state operations, because every state uses a different method. Even apportionment states apportion differently. So you have a possibility of taxing more than 100% of the income, but you also have the possibility of taxing less than 100%. That's what happened in Morton. Morton had it all allocated out of Ohio, so Ohio got nothing from it. And yet, it didn't pay 100% of its income to other states. It's a risk that you always have when you're, unless you say every state has to adopt the exact same formula.
So your view, the department's view when Morton was decided, is that it was not a
good decision. It went against our argument.
Yeah, what's your view to that? Would a more just and appropriate result be to overturn Morton and go back to the position that the department took at that time?
My personal belief is that it would have been better if Morton was decided than the way the commissioner took. But the problem now is you have this unsettling of any reliance that taxpayers and the tax commissioner have had for 8 years now. If it's to be overturned, let the General Assembly do it. They've had 8 years to do it, and notably they have not done that. Maybe they disagree with what the commissioner's position was. If the General Assembly does it, you don't have this reliance problem because it operates prospectively only. If the court does it, taxpayers and the commissioner can go back 4 years. And these are huge transactions. These are generally
We could could do a prospective as well.
Well, I think that's a real question now. You have a recent U.S. Supreme Court decision that has said that some of the documents are no longer appropriate documents, documents that it can't apply their decision prospectively only. Now, I realize that it may be open at this court to decide on some of the ones, but that's certainly a problem. If the court feels it could do so, it would certainly take care of a lot of reliance issues. But the fact is, the General Assembly certainly can do it at any time it wants to. Again, this decision's been around for 8 years. There have been plenty of cases in which this particular issue has arisen within the tax department. In fact, one or two of them have gone before a tax appeal since the board's decision.
So you're born again with regard to Borden. Out of practical necessity.
We were bound by the court's decision. It has been bound for 8 years by the court's decision.
Yeah, but you were... Not only we lost the case, you argued it, didn't you?
Well,
you were on it.
I was on brief. I did not get the argument, but the court heard the argument. In fact, the statute is not clear. The only suggestion is that it clearly applies to everything. But... The court construed the statute and found that no, there's nothing in there that says this statute was intended to follow a federal scheme. And as a result, it found that it had to be apportioned under the capital provision in 5730518.
And that's what you did here, you apportioned.
Exactly. We did precisely.
And that's all the statute provided. That's all the statute provides for. There's no allocation any place, is it?
Well, up through 8 are allocation provisions. C&D, it could only be allocated under C&D or apportioned under 8. Those are the only alternatives. If it's under C&D, which this court held, it was apportioned. It's allocated to the location where the property was located at the time of sale. What we did in this case, 87% of the property sold was located in Ohio. The tax commissioner allocated 87% of the case to Ohio. That's precisely what we were required to do under the court's decision in Portland. I would like to address Mr. Berman's statement that nobody's encouraging after being in front of the court of the office. The commissioner has always taken the position in this case that the capital gain tax. Because that's what this court said. This section of income constituted in Borden. Suggested that Borden didn't hold it, it was capital gains through the graveyard. Borden specifically held that this type of income, and the only income at issue, was the exact same type of income at issue here. That is that portion of the gain that resulted from the adjustment to the basis for the depreciation capture. This court said it had to be allocated pursuant to 5731051C&D. If you read 051C&D, it only applies to capital gains. So the suggested court didn't find C&D or capital gains in order to be. It's simply a conflict.
They understand. So if the assets that have been located in the
we can nothing from, even though board conducted state business in the state of Ohio. We did not receive a penny of that from that sale.
Because the property is all located outside, just outside Ohio.
That's correct.
Here it's site just in Ohio.
That's correct. And that is the only difference in this case. That's why the taxpayer don't like it in this particular case. They could turn around and have a sale next year, property located outside the state. They would benefit from the board's decision and from the tax commission's application and the board's decision.
Well, then why was Gordon wrong? Because the statute says allocation.
In the short time period I have left, I would like to address the constitutional issues briefly with respect to both the Commerce Clause and the Equal Protection Clause. I would commend you to the Mormon Manufacturing Commission. It addressed all of the issues that are raised by Hartsville in their case. What it points to is that if there's some disparity in treatment, it's not the fault of Ohio, it's not the fault of the one particular state. It results from the fact that states overall use different methods. Because states use different methods, you're going to have a possibility of duplicative taxation and disparity in treatment. But it's pointed out in a sentiment of the United States Supreme Court that routinely held Constitution imposes no rule that the states have to apply uniform methods of apportioning or allocating income controlled by state corporations. As I suggested here, the U.S. Supreme Court pointed out in the Allied Signal case that should be left to Congress because they can't legislate in the area. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Burns, you've used your time to get 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. The reason Gordon is wrong is because although the property is located in Ohio, the other states constitutionally are entitled to take their percentage of that recapture. And that's the problem. I know the property is here and the Florida property of Gordon is there, but Ohio could have taken a piece of that and walked away from it. And that was the choice that was made. But now when you take the other side and you overtax,
what piece could they have taken from the Florida property?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What piece could they have taken from the Florida side of this property?
Well, whatever it was in Florida, whatever the percentage was, the comfortable amount...
It was all there.
No, Your Honor. No, no. I understand the property was there, but they were clearly constitutionally entitled to take a piece of that property sale in Florida.
Okay, but I thought we were boiling this down to the situs of the property, and all the property in Borden was in Florida.
That's correct, Your Honor, but that does not change what I've said because Ohio clearly was entitled constitutionally to take a piece of that. And everybody's surprised that Ohio didn't take a piece of that.
How much would it have gotten?
Whatever the apportionment factor is. So if theirs was like Hartsville, 10%. They would have gotten 10% of that depreciation. That's entirely acceptable, and there's not a thing wrong with it. In our case,
but it wouldn't be based on the site of the property. What is it based on? Where does the 10% come? Just a nice number? Or?
No, Your Honor, that is a calculated number that the issuer from apportionment ratio. So everything gets assigned by that 10%. So in our case, 10% of the income, 10% of the expenses come to Ohio. So in our case, this property is located in Ohio, but Pennsylvania and California and Florida are entitled to their piece of it. And that's what's wrong. Ohio is specifically citing a year taking the whole thing, 87%, instead of taking a portion of the share.
But we're the only state that does that.
No, but they are being challenged in the other states. And the states that don't, there are only three states in the record. There's Delaware, South Carolina, and Louisiana. Big states, the states that are important, are doing it like we're asking you to do this. There are differences, and Mr. Farron is right. Nobody is absolutely on the same wavelength. States don't have to be on the same wavelength. But that's not the issue. It's not the fact that everybody has to be exactly the same. Well, what's happening here is that constitutionally, the other states are entitled to a piece of this, and Ohio is taking too much. And the statute corrects this problem, avoids the constitutional problem, by saying it's only the capital gain. And if you focus on capital, and not allocate non-capital, apportion non-capital gain, then the constitutional problem goes away.
Do one time more for me, maybe the chief. Where does the 10% figure come from?
In our case, Your Honor, there when you take the whole pot of income.
Or the Florida case.
Or the Florida case.
The Florida.
I don't know, Your Honor, for the record, what the apportionment ratio was. I would say the apportionment ratio was the same across the
country. All right, well, let's ask it this way. How do you determine the apportionment ratio?
There is a calculation, there is a formula that the state provides you, and that's not
in In our statute.
In our statute.
So any property. And the only reason we're taking extra time, or I am, is because I'm pressing you. I think the commissioner ends up with it both ways now. Looks to me like, if we follow Borden, they get the 87% of it from you, and maybe next week they want to take 10% or whatever you say of property situs in some other jurisdiction. They get it every. They get a piece of the action in every case.
Actually, what happens is Ohio paid too much constitutionally when the property is in the state and walked away from income and title to in other states. And the statute doesn't contemplate that result. In Florida, Ohio should have gotten a piece of that income and did not.
The apportionment formula is based on the business that you do all over the country.
That's a whole new
state. Maybe zero because you're not.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised for opinion.